You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Boy, it's probably safe to say the Citibank did not do much sleeping over the weekend. No, the city was very much wide awake negotiating a bailout from the federal government. The Treasury Department has agreed to inject $20 billion into the financial giant Citigroup, whose stock has lost 60% last week, and went into something of a crisis over the weekend as investors watched around the world. We're joined by Henny Sender, who's a senior correspondent for the Financial Times. Henny, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You know, we were talking last week about Citigroup as a bellwether for the financial stocks generally and the big banks in the United States particularly. What does this bailout say about the viability of the rest of the financial sector that remains in private hands as we speak this morning?
Well, I think the first thing it says is, you know, better be first in line. You know, it's so bad. I mean, this is a here we go again kind of situation. You know, let's try this one for Citi. And this is massive. They are throwing so many resources at Citi. At the same time, they're saying this deal is on for anyone else whose failure would endanger the financial system. But there are banks waiting in line who think, are we going to make the cut?
I mean, I guess if you're a former executive at Lehman Brothers this morning, you're feeling pretty darn miserable. And the auto industry was in town last week in Washington trying to get some sort of a bailout, but Citigroup raises its hand and says, we're in trouble. The government moves instantaneously. What does that say to the broader economy?
Well, it says banks are so vital to the economy. Credit is the lifeblood. We cannot afford to let a bank go down. We can afford to let a steel company go down. We may be able to afford letting a car company go down. We may even have thought we could let a Wall Street firm go down. But what if it's a bank? Absolutely no way when it's a big bank like Citi. We cannot afford the ripple effects.
Hold on there, Henny. Joining us now is Peter Marici, who's an economist. Marici, he's an economist and business professor at the University of Maryland, who's a frequent contributor to this program. Peter, thanks for joining us.
Nice to be with you.
Peter, you really called this one, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look at how much, they only had about $20 billion in collateralized debt obligations, so mortgage-backed securities left to write down. But yet, the federal government's guaranteeing $300 billion worth of debt. As I said, the whole balance sheet at Citigroup is corrupted. The business plans are flawed. This is what happens when a compensation package drives your business plan. I mean, what's really a shame about this, a couple of things. First of all, there's no change in management. Second of all, if you have a commercial building in Manhattan and you can't pay your mortgage to Citigroup, you'll lose your building. But the Treasury is going to make up the difference on the loan. Remember, they're guaranteeing $300 billion worth of Citigroup's loans. That's absurd. So we have extreme moral hazard here. It may be that we can't let Citigroup close, not fail, close. But we didn't have to make this kind of sweetheart deal. This sends a terrible message to the country. This is basically Hank Paulson taking care of his buddies on Wall Street.
Henny Sender, what do you think about Peter's argument there?
You know, it resonates with me. I think it was not onerous enough as a package. However, having said that, you could argue that when the government said, we care about moral hazard, let's let Lehman go, the lesson was, when you're in a crisis, you can't afford to teach that. I mean, as the CFO of Citi said to me late last night, you know, this isn't about punitive. This is about saving the financial system. Lucky Citi, you know, to have messed up so royally and gotten bailed out because the larger system couldn't afford their mistakes.
Lucky.
It's not a matter of being punitive, ma'am. It's not a matter of being punitive, but rather being reasonably fair. While we couldn't let them absolutely fail, did we have to let the managers like Vikram Pandit sit there and keep his $155 million signing bonus and
so
forth?
Well, that's why I said your argument resonated with me,
yeah,
Peter.
I mean,
but hold on, Peter. Hold on, Peter. Henny, let me ask you about the timing. What I don't understand is toxic assets on the books of Citigroup. Everyone has known that that's the case, as it is with many banks. The question has been how much of those going to be worth as we move forward. Why is Citigroup falling apart now?
Well, you have to ask the stock market that. They could not afford to let the stock market slide anymore because all Citi's counterparties were too nervous. And while the Fed was saying to the world, we're backstopping deposits in the U.S., you know, people weren't sure abroad. I spent half of yesterday on the phone with friends of mine in Hong Kong saying, who were saying to me, should we pull our deposits from Citibank Hong Kong? So the bank's unraveling was really sort of the stock market being the catalyst for that. And with the stock market, you know, voting no on Citi, you know, its share price plunge was making it impossible to raise capital in the market. There's such gridlock, they couldn't sell assets. You know, it is such a mess.
All right, well, let's talk practically about a couple of the things that have been proposed here. And, Peter, I'd love your response to this, if we could get it. There was discussion over the weekend that the way that these toxic assets are going to be guaranteed by the federal government is to create a toxic bank, to basically pull them out from underneath the umbrella, which is looking pretty ugly these days, in the Citibank logo, and create a sort of a bank of toxic assets that would be separately managed by the federal government. Does that make any sense to you, Peter? And Henny, I'd love to hear your response as well.
Well, my feeling is with competent bank management, that they're better managed inside the bank. And it really is an accounting operation as to whether you put them in a separate bank or you guarantee them inside the bank, as long as you have a clear red line around what is included and not included. To me, that was more window dressing, is that whether you put it in a separate bank or not. The trick is to get those things off their books in some way so that Citigroup can continue doing the things that we need it to do.
Well, Henny, then the question is what's coming down the pike? There was also discussion over the weekend that securitized credit card obligations are the next sort of toxic asset to hit Citibank. And if that is the case, it could be worth a lot more than we've even seen to this point.
Well, interestingly enough, credit card loans are not part of this deal. They wanted to establish a template with Citi that could be applied to other banks, and other banks don't nearly have the problems with credit cards that Citi does. What they tried to do with this deal is say to Citi, we're giving you so much capital and we're getting rid of so many problems that you will have excess capital. So please go into the market and start lending again. And you know what? All of these assets aren't terrible. Go into the secondary market, buy some of them, hold them for a while, make a little money, help us break the logjam. And, you know, everybody is holding their breath. I will be very interested to see how the stock market greets this news when it opens in a couple of hours.
Henny, why is there not more pressure, as Peter noted, for upper management to step aside?
Well, that is an interesting question. I think they felt that the management team is not up to the job, but there is no clear plan B for management. And what do you do if A management team isn't worth it, but there's no clear B management team? And I think that was their problem that idea.
I suspect that the management is probably not feeling terribly secure this morning at Citigroup, even though there hasn't been anything specifically said about this gang.
Totally agree with you, Peter.
Peter and Henny, final question. You know, the analysis of the Depression has always been, back in the late 1920s and early 30s, that ignoring the banks and focusing exclusively on labor and manufacturing was a mistake and prolonged the Depression. We're certainly not making that mistake this time around, but it seems like we're ignoring Main Street at the expense of the banks. Peter?
Well, I'd say so. That's absolutely correct. An important part of this problem was the banks. Another important part of the problem was the impact of the overvalued currency against the Asian export platforms like China and its effect on manufacturing in the Midwest. Now, I know Detroit, like Citigroup and the others, have made a lot of bad management mistakes, but also they've been laboring under an overvalued currency vis-a-vis Asian suppliers for some time now.
And that's snapping back right now.
Well, no, it's not snapping back with regard to the age. Well, it's hurting them.
Yeah.
Is what I'm getting at is that the stronger the fall in the dollar over the last couple of years has not been against those currencies, and the Treasury has refused to do anything about it. I mean, China's intervening at a pace of $700 billion a year to sustain an undervalued yuan.
The question
That's
is the timing.
Huge amount of money.
Yeah, the question is the timing. Henny, I'll give you the last word. Quickly, very quickly.
I think the relevant role model is Japan in their lost decade in the 90s. And what you learned there is as long as the financial sector is sick, the real economy cannot be healthy.
Well, let's not lose a decade here in the United States. Henny Sender from the FT, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And, of course, Peter Morici of the University of Maryland. Thanks, Peter.
Take care.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
869-8253.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.